Hi, my name is Carolyn Turcott, and I am a second-year graduate student in the lab of Jeff Sokalski at UNC Chapel Hill. I'm interested in studying whole genome approaches to understanding homologous recombination mechanisms and crossover patterning. So, during meiosis, the correct placement of crossovers throughout the genome is really essential to ensure that homologs segregate correctly. And crossovers are formed via a process called homologous recombination, which is a process that takes double-strand breaks and then repairs them via a homologous template. So I'm going to talk and just give a brief overview of homologous recombination before I get into my work. So if you could direct your attention to figure one. During meiosis, programmed double-strand breaks are formed all throughout the genome, and then these breaks are resected 5 prime to 3 prime. The 3 prime single-stranded overhangs of these resected breaks can then invade a homologous template, such as a homologous chromosome, and then they either have a choice of doing a little bit of synthesis and then dissociating from that template, which is called synthesis-dependent strand annealing, or SDSA, and that gives rise to a non-crossover, or the second end of that resected break can also engage with the homologous template, and that's called second end capture. So after second end capture in the classical model of meiotic recombination, it's thought that that free end essentially becomes ligated to form a double holiday junction, and that can be resolved in one of three ways. So it either can be resolved via dissolution, which is basically where you push kind of the junctions together until you can separate them via a topo II-like mechanism, and that results in a non-crossover. You can cleave two strands of the double holiday junction, and that can result in a non-crossover. Or you can cleave all four strands, and that results in a crossover. So, in this classical model, it's kind of thought that dissolution and cleavage of double holiday junctions to form non-crossovers doesn't actually occur based on the timing of these events that we see in yeast. And I'll get into a little bit about why that's important later. So, the one thing that's important to note about this model of recombination is that you can see here that there are different patterns of the DNA structures in the products that are indicative of the pathway that was chosen to generate the product. So, we can see that each of these different products has a different structure of heteroduplex DNA, which is DNA in which the two strands are coming from different parent molecules. So basically, pink is annealed to blue, as I'm showing in this diagram. And so these are really nice because they allow us to trace back the product to what pathway was used to achieve that product. So this is really nice, but unfortunately, these heteroduplex structures are normally obscured by mismatch corrections that go in and fix any SNP differences between the two strands of DNA. So normally we don't see them, but in Drosophila we've been able to knock out two forms of mismatch repair and actually get these heteroduplex tracts. So what a former postdoc in the lab, Nicole, did was, if we move on to figure two, she used this test locus in which she could isolate recombinants, and she basically characterized heteroduplex patterns at this test locus. And what she found, interestingly, is that we actually got a lot of patterns of heteroduplex that we don't normally see. So, one thing to note here is that in terms of crossovers, we only see one type of heteroduplex DNA recovered, which has been shown in other organisms as well. So, there is, interestingly, a bias in how crossovers are formed, even though they're coming from a molecule that is seemingly unbiased in terms of its structure. So we only observed one heteroduplex pattern with these crossovers, and for non-crossovers, we saw about equal numbers of cis heteroduplex DNA, which is indicative of synthesis-dependent strand annealing, or SDSA, and non-crossovers with this trans heteroduplex DNA pattern, which is thought to result from double holiday junction dissolution in the classic model, which is kind of unusual because we don't actually think that dissolution is occurring in meiotic recombination. And so all of these interesting results warrant more investigation of this model and potentially revision of this model. But The problem with this assay is that it requires a large number of flies to perform, and it's relatively low yield. And so we really need a better way of using the genetic tools that we have in Drosophila to perform this kind of assay on a larger scale. And so what I'm trying to do is basically to look at heteroduplex DNA genome-wide. So what I'm doing is I'm taking advantage again of these mismatch repair defective flies, like Nicole did. And so I'm using females that are mismatch repair defective and are heterozygous for many SNPs throughout the genome so that we can look at meiotic events in their progeny and be able to identify them via SNP differences. So I'm taking these females and I am mating them to a type of male that has an interesting phenotype that we can use to our advantage. So these males, MS3K81 males, have a telomere protection defect in their sperm that causes the paternal genome to degrade upon fertilization. And so that enables us to just sequence the maternal DNA in the progeny, which helps with the recovery and the coverage needed to identify this heteroduplex DNA. And so I am currently in the process of building up these flies that I'm using for this assay. And once I have that done, then I'm going to be able to sequence the progeny of these crosses via Oxford Nanopore. So another thing that I'm trying to do is to simulate recombination computationally, and this will hopefully both inform this whole genome sequencing project and also might as also be informed by this whole genome sequencing and the results of this whole genome sequencing. And so to do this, I am using a model of crossover interference to simulate how crossovers occur genome-wide and applying that to real genomes using variant call format files, which basically list SNP differences between two genomes to determine how many recombination events are traceable in meiotic products via SNP differences. And so this can be used to answer all sorts of questions about how many, double strand breaks are actually occurring in meiosis. How much coverage do we need to perform our sequencing? So it'll be really useful for those types of analyses. So in terms of my predictions for how I think we're getting these unusual types of heteroduplex DNA, I think that most crossovers and non-crossovers are actually occurring via unligated double holiday junctions. So you can see this in Figure 5 in the yellow panel with Class 1 crossovers, which are crossovers that are subject to interference. And so this is a pathway that would generate both the single crossover pattern that we see exclusively, as well as that trans-heteroduplex DNA signature that we also see. And so this is a prediction that would resolve both of those issues with the classical model of recombination. So, in terms of future directions, one thing I'd like to do is to use HetSeq, so this heteroduplex sequencing platform, to determine how heteroduplex structure and crossover patterning are affected in meiotic mutants, which also might enlighten our understanding of homologous recombination mechanisms and crossover patterning. And I'd also like to assess regional differences in heteroduplex DNA throughout the genome to determine whether cis and trans heteroduplex DNA might be localized to distinct regions of the chromosome arms, and so that might be related to mechanisms of crossover regulation, which would give rise to two different patterns of heteroduplex DNA. So, thank you very much for listening to my talk, and I'd be happy to take any questions either during the live session or over email at carolyn.turca@unc.edu. Thank you.